Hello, everybody. Welcome to Fired Up post-debate coverage. Tonight's political showdown between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump was less debate and more like a bizarre threesome with Harris and the two ABC moderators. Even Pornhub's executives are scratching their heads at this one and will more than likely pass on those distribution rights. The moderators, playing the role of Harris's personal cheerleaders, navigated a sea of softball questions, often failing to follow up when she dodged policy inquiries, like a politician avoiding a lie detector test. Harris basked in the warm glow of gentle prompts, while Trump had to fight for airtime to respond like it was the last slice of pizza at a campaign rally. But hold on to your MAGA hats, people. Trump surprised everyone by bringing his A-game, serving up zingers faster than you can say coffee. Meanwhile, Harris seems stuck in a time warp, dredging up issues from the 1980s like she was auditioning for a Stranger Things spinoff. Her debunked racial narratives had viewers wondering if she'd mistaken the debate stage for an alternate reality where facts are optional. So buckle up, America. We're about to dissect this political circus, exposing the bias, the dodges, and the moments that left us all wondering if we'd accidentally turn into a sitcom instead of a presidential debate. Get ready for a wild ride through the absurdity that was tonight's face-off. Everybody, this is William Del Pilar once again, and this is Fired Up, a special presentation of post-debate coverage. As you saw in my intro, this was more of an ugly threesome between David Muir, the woman, the other moderator, forget her name, and Kamala Harris. And like I said, even Pornhub is going, what the hell was that that I just saw? Even sailors are going, turn it off, baby, turn it off. So let's get right into it. With my guest here, Jean Mangani, I'm hoping Annette Ross shows up. I'm not sure where she's at the moment. It's not like her. But gee, real quick, tell us who you are and give me your initial thoughts on this debate. You just sound, we cannot understand what you're saying. You sound very broken up. I tell you what, if you can check your headset, John, you got it?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. If you can check your headset real quick, we'll bring you back on there. Okay, so people, my first initial thoughts, again, this was pretty much a threesome. The moderators, David Muir was so bad here that I actually think this may have helped Donald Trump. I mean, they were handing Kamala Harris softball after softball to respond to Donald Trump's comments. But Donald Trump had – they would always want to go on once Kamala would say something about Trump or the policy, and Trump had to literally start the break in to give his 2 cents worth. It was immediate. Kamala lied about Project 2025. They didn't correct her. She lied about COVID-19. They didn't correct her. It was just pretty bad. Gee, are you back with us? Oh, you can't hear me, can you? No, there's something. Yeah, I don't know what it is. But it sounds like a broken headset when the headset isn't it's kind of like the wires are broken there because you come across broken. Or is it just me, Big John? Anyway, so let's get back to the ABC bias. So, for example, Harris didn't answer why Biden and Harris kept the tariffs. You know, ABC didn't hit Kamala on the Project 2025 lie. There was an absolute gall, if you think about it, that ABC kept fact-checking only Trump while letting her lie in every answer. That was very infuriating. So, for example, they didn't fact check her on the Fine People, Charlottesville hoax lie, on IVF, on Project 2025, on the bloodbath hoax, but they kept fact checking Trump. And they really weren't fact checking Trump as much as taking shots at Trump and handing Kamala softball. So this was more of a setup, but we kind of knew this was going to happen. We knew this would be the case. The biggest issue I had was she didn't answer one question about her flip-flops on her policies. And what was infuriating was, I am going to get to those questions here in a moment. But first, I want to sit there and say this lie. And they didn't push back. They did not go to her and say, hey, you didn't answer a question on public on your policy positions. They just moved on. It was a clear setup. It was the fix was in. The fix was in. This is why ABC News is biased. This is why we knew they would be biased, you know. In fact, at one point, David Muir, and I don't know David Muir from A Hole in the Wall, meaning I've never watched a show. He's not even a good-looking fella in my eyes, and not that I'm judging, but when they hired him some years back, I'm like, okay, whose knees was he on to get this gig, you know? He's not very impressive, but tall, great voice, you know, has the look, you know, that look where they sit there and they look good on camera. But it was the first time I actually saw him in action, and he's no different than George Stephanopoulos, maybe a milder version. Trump did look strong by stating at times what some of the analysts were saying about him, specifically when it came to NATO and how foreign powers feared him. Because the thing about Trump in bringing up some of the issues that she lied about him is that the facts are there. Whether people want to admit it or not, statistics, you know, the employment rate, the jobs numbers. So, but in this case, you kind of talked about NATO and how the analyst actually said how he strengthened foreign policy, because it's true. We've been invaded when Biden was in power. So he was able to bring that out. Gee, are you back with us, brother?
Yeah. How does that sound?
Oh, much better. Much better. All right, people. Give us your initial thoughts here on this debate, what you saw here, what you thought.
Yeah, so we just, Annette's still coming back from the watch party that we were at, so there was no test time or a prep time here. I literally rolled into my office at 8:01, so my initial thoughts. So I think Kamala had three objectives here, and Trump had three objectives, right? So let's start with Kamala. I think her first objective was speak coherently, right? So she's given one public, I guess, unscripted exchange, and that was with CNN, and that interview was basically a disaster for her. I think the second objective for her was no word salads and don't cackle, right? So the third objective is project joy, and that's with how you speak in your body language,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So if you start with the first one, speak coherently, I think the bar was set so low that she way overperformed that, right? And that was the main takeaway for me from this debate, is that she overperformed that she looks like a competent, coherent, eloquent person. Now, we know that a lot of what she was saying was basically rehearsed for the last week, right? So,
right.
So she was practicing all those things, and we can get into some of the specifics why the practice part of it came out in certain parts. I think the no word salads, she went into some word salads, but it wasn't too bad. She didn't cackle, so I think that's a win for her. But the project joy, so she started off the debate with, this is going to be a campaign about joy, but starting with maybe the second question, because actually I will say the first answer to the economy was a major word salad, because she didn't want to say, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? She didn't want to say no. Right. And she could have said no, because 4 years ago, we're in the midst of a jobless pandemic. So she could have made that case, but she did not want to say no. I will say the next two, no word salads, no cackling, she succeeded. But then the Project Joy, I saw her furrowing her brow. And it didn't help that she was looking over at Donald Trump and trying to engage him with eye contact. And then she did this a couple times.
Yeah.
And it looked like she was acting, right? So, and I'll add a fourth one, maybe with the word salads and not cackle, is look authentic, right? And it just didn't look authentic. So I would say that the look authentic loss that she had, which I don't think she looked authentic, that's going to take a while to percolate. It's just like the stock market, like the day-to-day goes up and down, but over time, it's a weighing machine, right? In the short term, people are going to say, oh, she came out, she spoke well. We understood most of what she was saying. But in the end, they're going to still say, but we don't really know who she is. And she's still inauthentic. So moving on to Donald Trump, I will say his number one thing is, because I think he's in the lead in the race here, is don't make any mistakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I will say he knocked it out of the park with that. He did not make any mistakes.
He was restrained, yes.
Yeah, he had a lot of restraint, right?
And, yes, a lot of restraint. You can see him holding back.
Right, a ton of restraint. And it was presidential, right? So I think if he had not succeeded with this, this debate would have not been a draw, which is what I think it was a draw. I think it would have been a loss for him. And I watched CNN. They're saying, oh, yeah, this is a knockout debate. Kamala knocked out Trump just like Trump knocked out Biden. No, not at all. I don't think so. So his number one thing was don't make any mistakes, which I believe he succeeded. Stay on the issues. 100% stayed on the issues, right? He was baited with the whole, okay, is she black or what do you think about that? And he goes, I don't care. I don't care. Just, you know, and clearly he did not even want to explain anything about that. He just said, I don't care. And then Kamala actually did go into a word salad about that and pretended with her stories or whatnot. So number two, stay on the issues. I think he succeeded with that. But I would say these two successes are basically neutral for him, right? Because we all know who he is, right? So there's no like revelation here that, oh, he did not make any mistakes. Oh man, he's going to jump up 5 points in the poll. That's not what's going to happen.
Oh yeah.
Oh, he stayed on issues. He's going to jump up 5 points in the poll. That's not what's going to happen. The number third goal for him was not to take the bait, right? And there were a couple times where he did take the bait. Oh, your companies did this. Bankruptcy, $400 million. And he did take the bait, but it wasn't bad, right? He just said, okay, no, I didn't get $400 million, not even close. And then he just, after about 20 seconds, got off of it. So you could tell a little bit that it got under his skin, but he recovered quickly. But, you know, as we talk more about tonight, she had, and you can see it on her face, it got under her skin a lot.
Yes.
And she did, it didn't come out through her mouth. It came out through her facial expressions.
Right, right. You can lose elections through how you are seen without speaking. Now, Trump just has this, I don't know if you guys, I forget the ventriloquist's name, Jeff Dunham. He's got this one character who's always got that Judge Dredd, you know, that grumpy look. Trump needs to learn how to smile, though. He just has that look. But Annette, so those are G's initial thoughts. Now, my initial thoughts, you weren't on. I'm an old sailor. To me, that was like the worst threesome history has ever seen between David Muir, the other moderator, and Kamala Harris, that even Pornhub executive says will pass. That's how bad I thought it was for Kamala Harris. And my point being is that I think the moderators were so biased, they actually may have helped Trump look better. And this was a standoff, not because Trump didn't win, but because of the way it was set up. You know, there was no way Trump was going to come out looking like a winner, but he came out holding his own. And my belief, though, is they went to a lot of old tropes. And I think our economy has been so bad since COVID in terms of how people are feeling, the gas prices, the energy prices, that they're starting to realize, especially minorities, like, we don't, kind of don't care about something in 1980. You know, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to pay my electrical bill here. So I don't think I thought of you, G, in the sense they didn't help her because all they did was go back to the well with the same old tropes. And at this point, they're just falling flat. So and then that's kind of the take I had. You heard G's take. What is your initial take on this?
Well, I agree with what you said. You know, a lot of times they were showing their faces side by side, and Trump did have that. He looked like his color. I'm sorry, but like appearances, they do matter. He looked like his color was a little bit off. He had a very stern type of scowl at times. I wish his face wouldn't have been as just maybe more that you couldn't read it as much. I'm bad too. My girls say you can always read my face. I found myself, maybe I disagree with you guys.
Uh-oh. Are y'all back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay, everything froze on me. I apologize to the audience.
I thought it was just me, but no. It was
I thought it was just me. It may have been streaming.
Middle of a profound thought, William. I mean, come on.
You were in the middle of, I heard what you were saying, so like, I heard what you and G, and then,
I heard what you and G, no. I thought he had some missed opportunities. I don't think, because if it was me when I wanted to speak for him, I was like speaking for him in the audience. I don't think he drove the point home that you've been sitting in this chair. You've been in a leadership position. You're the reason this is happening now. And sometimes they're just, how come? Also, by the way, there was an opportunity that he missed when I would have said, you've been, how she's been propping up Biden for so long. I mean, I didn't understand. Right. I'm not saying, I think you should have been restrained about the Willie stuff. You know, and San Francisco and how she got to where she got today, definitely like her personal story. I was glad that he stayed away from that. I'm glad he didn't do that, how he can sometimes be sort of like mean-spirited in that way. He did not do that. He was very restrained. But I also felt like he could have actually said, like, how could you let this happen with the American people? You knew this guy was incompetent. You knew this guy had dementia at best. You knew that he couldn't function in the role as the president and commander-in-chief of the United States of America. And you hid it, and you pretended that it was all okay. Like, that's dangerous. You put us in a dangerous position. And I don't think that did he really drive that point home?
No, because he doesn't have the capacity. Trump is a bully at heart. And when I say bully, I'm not saying it in a mean way. People at that level of power that he had, especially in the New York culture, it's your way or the highway. And that's how you drive your point. That's how you run your companies. And for him, it works. But in this debate, it was a lot of missed opportunities. In his defense, he did not have time for those opportunities, nor would he have been given that time. Only because Trump, if you notice, when she would say something, they would be ready to move on. And Trump, you heard his mic would be muted, and then they would let him speak. So he didn't even have those opportunities to have that conversation. But for her, it was like, slurp, slurp, Kamala, please respond back to me, no Trump. So, I mean, that's how they were coming across. And to G's point, Kamala came across looking like a mean girl, not with her words necessarily, but her facial expressions. Like Trump's grumpy look, it was grumpy from the get go. So exactly. So you didn't pick up, oh man, he's a jerk. Look at what he's doing. It's just, that's just how he looks. So he won that battle. I wanted to talk policy, but the truth of the matter is there is no policy to talk about because the only time they brought up policy was when they asked her about her flip-flops. And then what did she do? I am going to get to that question, but first, and she never got to it, and they never hit her back with, are you going to answer the question? But they would on Trump. And the reason I say they were looking at tropes is they wouldn't let him go with J6. They wouldn't let it go with the 1980 Central Park. So this wasn't a debate on policy. This was a clear-cut fix to make Kamala look good. So as soon as they touched on the policy, they quickly moved away, except for one policy issue, which I predicted. What is that? What is that? You have your finger raised. Which one is that?
Was it the foreign policy, right?
No, the reproductive rights. Yeah, they stayed on that longer than normal than the others.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, I thought that was the part of the debate that I thought went the worst for Trump.
Yes, it did.
But not because of his policy. No. Because I don't think it was wise to say they're even killing babies after they're born, because I don't even know if that's happening or not, but I think if he could have just stuck, because then you're putting something out there that people think is extreme. I think when people go to extremes, it never looks good. People right away.
Hold on. You know, you're right. But that was because Trump didn't do what you did. He didn't go deep enough. See, Trump never said that. But what Ralph Northam, and then he screwed it up. It wasn't West Virginia. I don't know if you guys caught that. It was Virginia. It was Ralph Northam. Ralph Northam, there is video of him being interviewed on the radio or a podcast where he says, and we'll take care of her. We'll give birth to the baby. Then we'll take the baby to the other room. And then we'll have the conversation with the mother on what needs to be done. That's what Trump was referring to. He never said it was codified or it was law. See, so, and that's what I mean by Trump didn't have the capacity. He should have paused or said, so while this isn't law, this is the path they're going. And it's true, because the path they keep going seems to be, you know, allowing for abortion to happen longer and longer and longer. I don't know if there's a term for it, but you're right. It's not that Trump dropped the ball. It's the moderator lied and Trump did not defend himself as he should have. Gee, just kind of propped up there. Did you have some words to say about that?
No, Annette, go ahead.
Well, I think one quick thing to say, William, I also think she dropped the ball in that conversation too, though. Because when she gets into that whole dramatic, like, there's a child, and that like 11-year-old child is going through, was it incest maybe? I'm sorry. And she gives like the storytelling thing, and she gets all, that seems so gross and insincere to me. So that
I agree.
I don't think that she really scored a lot of points. I mean, maybe they have a better policy that more people agree with, but I don't think she did a good job debating that issue.
That issue was about Trump minimizing the damage, because as we talked about with the last podcast, it's a very weak point. It's a losing point for Republicans because, as you said, Annette, they don't know how to talk to issues. But I thought he was able to salvage some of the damage because it was a clear setup for, and they went to it so quick. You know, I was a little shocked at how quick. I thought they would wait till the middle or towards the end to kind of leave the viewer. Man, she kicked ass, you know. But they went to it early. But I thought Trump salvaged it a bit with the IVF. As I told Big John, we're forced to pay taxes regardless. And I'm like, okay, I believe in IVF. There's a chart that I just saw on my favorite podcaster's page, Patrick Bet David, that showed the reproductive rates. And from a scale of like 1 to 4, the U.S. is like 1.6, you know. So I am for IVF. And especially with the – I'm like, we're going to use our tax dollars. Let's use it to better the country, to become more reproductive, to have more babies, because we're a dying nation, statistically speaking. So I thought he salvaged it on the IVF. And then I'm going to have the last word here. What did you get out of the whole reproductive debate portion of it in the terms of points scored or points not scored? Did he minimize it? Did he completely lose it? Did they score big on it? What was your take on that?
No, I think that part was a draw, personally, and that's a good thing because that would have been Trump's weakest point, right? But he kept going back to, and we all know Trump's not the most articulate, not a Ronald Reagan, right? But he was basically saying, it goes back to the states, it goes back to the states, let the people decide, right? And he kept hammering that over and over again, where she said, okay, I'm going to codify this into law at a federal level, and then accusing Trump of saying, which he did say, he's going to codify the opposite position. So it's almost like she's so rehearsed, and this is one of the points I wanted to get to. She was so rehearsed, she wasn't really listening to him, right? So let's say Project 2025, right, as a quick example. He quickly disavowed that early on, right? She kept bringing it up, and it's like, woman, like, get a clue. Like, she don't have to disavow it. So don't keep going after that, because it just makes you look like, you're not listening. So in this case, it sounded like she was not listening. Oh, he's going to ban abortion. He's going to pass a law. And he's clearly saying, no, it's going to stay with the states, and each state can decide what they want to do. And we had this discussion last week. So as far as that goes, I think it was a draw, maybe a slight win for her. I agree with Annette. Like, and I don't know how the middle or the left wing thinks in terms of sob stories. You got to tell a story that's believable. But for her, it just seems so rehearsed. It's like, I mean, it's almost like she was trying to contrive a tear here. She's like, okay, here's a woman. It's like, okay, come on. How many times did you practice this story with your handlers? So in the end, like I said before, the stock market's a voting machine in the short term, but a weighing machine in the long term. I think they're going to say, okay, well, she overperformed in terms of what we thought she would do. But in the long term, it's going to be like, well, who's a more genuine person? And I don't think you come away thinking Kamala's a genuine person.
Right, right, right. No, I get that. Annette, so we saw a little bit of the alpha male here in G when he goes, woman. That's it.
Am I supposed to say man?
Woman, damn it. So, Annette. In terms of scoring points, and I apologize. When I say scoring points, what I'm referring to is, was anyone swayed with the reproductive discussion? I agree with G, overperformed, meaning she was so rehearsed, but I do think Trump came back strong with the IVF, and it was important. As callous or not, as coarse, that's a better word, as coarse as he is, he kept talking about the states. And even though he didn't say it, I think the audience got out of it what G was talking about, going, well, hold on. She's accusing him of wanting to codify this in at the federal level, but yet that's exactly what she says she's going to do. I think G's right. She's so rehearsed, she doesn't realize the double standard she says there. But in this case, it doesn't matter because half the country wants it codified the way she sees it. The other half wants it codified the other way. So I don't think she swayed anybody. You get the last word on the reproductive portion of the debate.
Wow.
Yeah, give us your points on this.
No, I think she continues to try to instill fear with that. And I think that's where people who are trying, who that point is important to them, she played it up to them. So yes. I'm saying this because I'm on a stream watching the debate and talking to my daughters. And my one daughter in New York is a liberal, and her friends, they're all like, that's exactly what they wanted her to say. They believe they have a fear of what Trump will do with that law, that he will take it away from the states and make some sort of like abortion ban that's like a nationwide thing. And so she plays.
Hold on. So we don't care about your daughter. And I'm saying that jokingly. The reason I say that is her vote is baked in. Regardless of what happens, she's a Kamala vote. What about the people who may be looking at this? Wow, I want my choice. But I also believe we can't be killing babies, you know, right at term, you know, or this. Those people who it's important to them, but they're also wondering how they're going to pay their electrical bill. So, and I apologize. I'm just picking on you with your daughter because your daughter's vote is baked in already. So you're right. She wanted to hear that from her candidate.
Yes, but then I look at that like a group. I mean, I don't know how many – you know, 20-somethings girls are all, I mean, across the United States are, that's what they need to hear from.
Oh.
I'm not looking at it like a daughter in New York, and you're right, it's baked in, but like.
Oh, no. I'm looking at it as women, just women in general. I'm not looking at it at 20-somethings.
The younger women. I'm thinking of like the younger women. So why don't you ask me specifically, William, so I can really understand. I want to answer well, and I think that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did this sway any women in the middle, regardless of age, who are concerned about the economy, their children, but who still want to make sure their choice is in place? Did this sway any of those women one way or the other?
No.
So in essence, it's a stalemate then, is what you're saying.
It's a stalemate, because I don't think that her fear tactic actually works. I think people believe that he really meant it when he said he put it back in the States and that's where it should be and that's where it's going to stay. I think people believe that was very believable to me.
So before we go on, who is the fourth member of our live stream behind you?
The dog?
That's Clover.
Yeah.
Trying to move him?
No, he's fine. Leave him there. I saw him last episode.
Talking about him.
Yeah, I saw him last episode. What's his name?
His name is Clover.
Clover.
The dogs.
So Clover. So Clover. I want to hear his thoughts on Kamala. All right, let's keep moving here. So I want to talk about this. I had to hold the monologue. There was nobody here. I'm like, I'm just talking. So I did bring up, it was horrific in the sense of how the fix was in. They tried to fact check Donald Trump on a few issues. They did none of it. And as G pointed out, it started the Project 2025. She immediately hit him and they refused to correct her about that. Then on IVF, then the Fine People Charlottesville hoax, the bloodbath hoax, but they kept trying to fact check Trump. I think they gave up on even fact checking Trump because Kamala was lying so badly. And Kamala kept coming back saying, you're going to hear a lot of lies like that. And I'm thinking that's where I say the fix was in. They would allow her to say things like that. And that's where I think G is right. Also, she came off looking bad. She came off looking like she won't look like a bully, but she did not win any women sympathy card votes tonight. So, and I thought that's because Trump was restrained. But what were your thoughts on the setup? I thought it was a bad threesome, you know, between the two moderators and Kamala, and the fix was in. Am I looking at this wrong, or did you think, we'll start with you, Annette, did you think it was a fair debate, moderated fairly? What are your thoughts on the setup?
I actually thought it started out okay. I did. I thought that David Muir was actually doing a good job. And you guys might disagree with me. I thought it got worse as it went on in terms of them giving her some support. It almost felt like they were intentionally giving her support. I'm like, why are they doing that? It didn't seem to start that way for me. Yes, she brought the 2025. I thought he did a really good job refuting that and a really good job saying, I've never read it. I don't know anything about it. I don't plan on reading it. You'd figure that would die there. But I guess there must be something to the points that people make, I guess, about politics is you just keep on saying it. You just keep on throwing it out there. You know, people's attention spans aren't great.
Oh, no.
They're thinking 2025, maybe that's something. And it is that. And then they're associating it with Trump anyway. I mean, sometimes I think those kinds of gimmicks might work. So,
actually, that's not a gimmick. That's a tried and true marketing strategy.
You
keep saying it over and over and over, yes. And eventually the mind it sets in and gets tied in. That it's actually it's true. It's a marketing strategy. Your take. And Annette, I do agree with you. I thought you had that big hard jab that showed where the debate was going when they didn't correct her on the Project 2025. But then it did settle in here or there. It was little innuendo type jabs, or they would correct Trump, or they would bring Trump up and challenge him. But it did become blatantly worse as the debate went on. It got to the point that halfway through, I thought they are so biased that the moderators are making Trump win supporters because they're seeing, especially black and minority supporters. I thought the moderators and how they played the race card, I mean, they had to go back to the 1980s. You know, I think minorities who are struggling to pay their bills, they're going, I don't need to hear that crap anymore, you know, because Trump showed his worth in terms of how he treated minorities and all Americans as president. So I thought all those hits fell flat, but I agree it did get worse as it went on. Gee, your take, was a fix in, or do you think it was moderated fairly?
No, I think they intended to come in moderating fairly. And I think that's how it started, right?
Yes.
And I think David Muir has actually done a very good job. I mean, he has a reputation for, like, I don't know which way he leans. And I don't even know who the other woman was. I can't remember her name. But she asked some questions, but she didn't seem to fact check. It seemed to be David Muir who did fact check about the election in 2020. And so Trump gave his answer, and then he said, well, actually, blah, 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 and this person and that person. And then Trump now arguing with David Muir for a little bit. And then
right, but that made Trump look good. That made Trump look good because he was absolutely right. See, that's me and Big John got into this discussion. And I said, all these courts, no court ruled on anything with voter fraud or election interference. Every court said you don't have standing. And to me, that was like the knockout punch because that's when David Muir got combative. And he got combative in my eyes because he did not see that knockout punch coming. And as he
I think the question was coming. I think the question was falsely accused or falsely claimed that there was election fraud, right? That was the original question because I remember him saying falsely. So he already presupposed the question, right? And instead, an honest question would be, do you believe the election in 2020 had fraud, and was it enough to tip the election, and why? And just leave his answer at what it is, right? Instead of saying, well, falsely, and you claim this, and everyone's shown you to be wrong, but what's your answer? Which is a biased fact check before you even ask the question. But then he did fact check Kamala, and it was, again, and in the effort to help Kamala, what he said, and if you remember this, he goes, see, Kamala, he didn't say that he lost the election in 2020. He still claims he won it. And it's almost like a backhanded slap, right? And it's like, wait.
The fix is in.
it's almost like, yeah, you're beautiful once you put on all that makeup. But I mean, it's almost like, wait, what? I think Kamala took that as, okay, I think they just ended up fact-checking Trump. I don't know. So that was a bizarre moment. But there were a couple other moments, but I can't even remember them. I agree with you. He did. David Muir fact-check Trump more. But they're not memorable to me. So
right. And that hurts Kamala. Now, let's move on to immigration here real quick, but with the continuation of the fact-checking. You know, this to me epitomizes how pathetic, disgusting, and go ahead.
No, say it. And then just let me say it really
How pathetic, disgusting, and how terrible today's journalism is. Because when they went to immigration, and a side note, y'all have to go to social media platforms and check out all these cat memes for Trump, you know, 2024. Because Trump brought up the Haitians just, you know, killing ducks. It's mostly ducks, you know, a few cats here and there. And this shows how pathetic journalism is. Well, ABC News went out and we talked to the city manager. And this is where, again, going to your original point, and that Trump did not know how to capitalize. My take would have immediately been, and America, this is why journalism is dead. They went to a city manager in a democratically controlled city who does not want me to win, instead of doing investigative journalism and talking to the people whose animals have been taken. To me, Trump loved it, but he did defend his point. He says, hey, I'm talking about the people. This is what the people are saying. You know, of course the city manager can say that. So Trump being this course did manage to get his point across. But so that was one, that was a fact check that I thought David Muir failed on miserably. But my point is immigration. And you can comment on that, though, Annette. But immigration is, I thought Trump was smart. He just kept going back to the border, to the murders, to the killings, because there's no denying what's happening in Aurora. There's no denying what's happened in Philadelphia, in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, in Florida, in Miami, in certain spots, in New York City, in terms of people getting killed, mugged, assaulted. So I thought he was smart in going back to that immigration. Your thoughts on the talk about immigration? And that was kind of scattered. Trump kept bringing it up, but they did try to spend a few minutes on it.
He circled back to it a lot. He did bring it up in several different segments. No, but they said it. The moderator said it. They said it's the worst it's ever been under the Biden administration. And only what, 6 months ago, there was the change that was made where they were like implementing a policy or implementing some border controls, right? I mean, they actually put it out there. That's why I'm like, wait a minute. They just admitted it. That it was the worst it has ever been under their watch. Isn't that enough? Is that?
No, not in the context of how they put it in, because had they put it into the context of how we're referring to it, it would have been powerful. But they didn't realize they were helping Trump making that comment. You know, they made a lot of comments like that, but they were meant kind of more to help Kamala or help move her along than they were to attack Trump. But what they didn't realize is when we would hear that, we'd be like, see, they're right, you know? And so they were slicing their own throats, just like the Haitians are, those poor ducks.
Yeah, no. I think he did great on immigration. He also, I think, did phenomenal on January 6th. I thought he nailed that really well because he did show restraint. He talked about that one lady that died. The only person that died that day was someone who was shot by someone who was being reckless. And, you know, that whole situation, I can't believe the way they characterize it. And I feel like he did a really good job with that. I mean, he stood up for himself. He talked about how he asked it to be peaceful. He explained the things that he said in his speech again and again. and then that he didn't want there to be some sort of crazy chaos. He did not ask for that. He wasn't promoting it. What he wanted was there to be some sort of a peaceful protest, whatever that, however the words, the two words that he used. I thought he did a great job on that. And I thought he did a
phenomenal job
on immigration. Those were two of his really, those were, and foreign policy. Sorry. Those are my three things I thought he did the best job on.
Yeah, we're going to get into foreign policy. Real quick, I mean, just real quick here, this is pretty much the internet, you know, is what's going around, is the fact-checking issue. Oh, Megyn Kelly helped start it out. But sticking to the J6, G, real quick, I thought Trump was brilliant when he brought up Nancy Pelosi, the National Guard. I agree with Annette. I thought that was the most powerful portion of the J6. Hey, I asked for National Guard. I asked for a peaceful protest. Yes, it was her job. What were your thoughts on the J6 port? Because, see, to me, the J6 is an old trope. They've done enough polling to where people don't – it doesn't even register in their minds, you know? So, to me, this is – the fix was in. They were trying to bring up an old trope to try to get the country emotionally riled up. And the country, again, they care more about paying their electrical bill than they do a J6. How did you think the J6 portion went?
No, I don't think that a lot of people worry about that. I mean, if people do worry about that, it's on the left. Maybe some people in the middle worry about the whole threat to democracy. But, you know, if for those people, this was the introduction, right? This was the chapter one. So he talked about Nancy Pelosi and her daughter, and he said the video came out just a few weeks ago. So they need to hammer on that a little more, but not in a way that makes it the central issue of this, because I think that's a non gratis argument, that he incited this riot. But you know what I thought was clever is that, okay, you're going after these people, but what about all these other riots along the way?
Yes.
What about the border, right? What about people coming in and you just don't care about what happens to all these cities that are burning, during these riots? And so I thought that was a good point. I just don't think the American people care about that in general. I think the left does because it's disqualifying in their mind for Trump. So,
right. This is the problem with pop culture, using pop culture as an analogy. You know, things happen in pop culture, then the higher levels up, they pick up on it after it's already old news. This is the same case. America's kind of moved on from J6, and they really weren't all that interested. It's just hate drives and emotion drives, but it's old news here. Now,
but you know where they went with after that, right? Let me just add on to that. Where they went with that afterwards was a threat to democracy, and Trump attacked that head on by saying, these guys have been calling me a threat to democracy, and I took a bullet for it because of what
these guys
are saying.
That's right. Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, that was a quick moment, but I hope that's a moment that's replayed a lot because that's true. I believe it was 8 to 10 days before Trump actually was shot, Biden says we need to put Trump in the crosshairs. So,
yes.
Okay, I don't think Biden meant let's kill him, but again, that rhetoric, someone out there goes crosshairs. Well, I know how to use a gun and put someone in the crosshairs and goes out and does it.
Okay, so moving on from J6, again, there's no policy to talk except for Ukraine and all that. We'll get to that shortly. She went after him. Again, old tropes, they set stories up, the J6, the abortion, the prosecution. See, she didn't say it, but he's a convicted criminal is pretty much what she was trying to say. And I thought Trump was pretty good at pushing back and talking about prosecutorial attack and how he wanted to terminate the Constitution. That's the J6, terminate the Constitution and this assassination talk. I'm writing these notes as I'm watching. But she tried to go after him on prosecution. First we'll go to G, then to you, Annette. How did you think he handled that? Because personally speaking, I think, again, looking at it from the minority perspective, there's two trains of thoughts. We get what we deserve because we can't shut our mouths. I'm proof of that. But I've also seen minorities prosecuted wrongly. And I think her trying to use the prosecution and showing how bad a person is a complete misfire because everybody in their dog knows, everybody in Clover knows they're just going after Trump on this. Gee, how do you think he handled that?
Well, okay, so it goes back to the expectations of the debate, right? And we kind of thought she would look like she did in that CNN interview, but she didn't. She came out strong, like a prosecutor, right? And she turned to Trump most of the time where he was trying not to look at her at all, right? And I think there was one time where he did, and even near the end said, you, you, you. But most of the time he referred to the debate. So you could see that she was trying to drill into him, right? And I don't know. You could take it multiple ways. I'm conservative, so I take it as she's like the puppy dog trying to, like, attack the adult, saying, you know, you better not, you know, act this way or whatnot. Sorry, lost my train of thought. What was the question?
How he handled the prosecution.
Yeah, so the prosecution part.
Attacking him.
So it was clever because I noticed he didn't say who ended up voting, right, on the juries. These were all Democrats or liberals. He didn't say any of that. He just said, these guys weaponized the justice system against me. You've never seen that in this country, right? Because he wants to win over some Democrats, right? So he doesn't want to say it was a bunch of Democrats that came after me and indicted me. So that I thought that was clever. But even
making a point
that these guys, it's Biden and Harris that's doing that. I wish he would have used the word banana republic. I think that would have made it a little more, would have put the cherry on top. Said, are we headed towards a banana republic where any of your opponents who disagree with you and want to win an election will just try to throw a bunch of frivolous lawsuits against you?
That's a good point. You're bringing it up that way. Bringing it up, are we headed? Because I'm like, had he sat there and said we've become a banana republic, in essence, what you're saying is people don't like
to be caught. Too far, right?
Yes. It's like, I think you may be drinking too much versus you're an alcoholic, buddy. You know, in one softer approach. Now, Annette, he did mention Fannie Willis. Oh, he mispronounced it. I can't remember, but it didn't matter. But he mentioned the AG in New York and the DA in New York City. So I thought that was good. I thought that she was not effective. Like she, again, going back to G in the last podcast, she was being given bad juju in terms of advice and in terms of what to go after. I thought this was another failed attack mode. How did you see this in terms of her going after him being a criminal?
I feel like you're not going to like my opinion on this, but I try to watch things and listen to them, not with the knowledge that I have, but sometimes just like if I was just someone averagely informed listening, I find the stuff about his lawsuits and what's happening, because I do think the DOJ is being weaponized. I think that is something that should be scary for all of us. But I find it honestly confusing. So I wonder if some people shut down at that point, don't really understand what it is. I think they think probably like this seems like they're weaponizing. They're only doing this to Trump. They've only done this. Like just seems like they keep on going. So I don't think that people buy into it. But I do think that it feels very confusing to me. And what they can't do, what they don't have the time to do, what Trump can't do to defend himself is he can't, like, go into it and explain it to us. This is what's happening. This is what I'm having to defend. I don't know. I find that to be a wash. The only part of it that I find that is convincing or that is compelling is how they're weaponizing the DOJ against him in whatever they can possibly do, which was be to stop him from running or to not be able to participate, to not be on the ballot. Honestly, I think they did similar things to Robert Kennedy as well. They just made it almost impossible for him to run. So that, I think, is all Americans should give us pause and we should think, what kind of a country are we living in now? Because that does not feel like a free society. So that is scary. But I don't think people necessarily understand that these lawsuits. I don't at times. I'm like, sometimes I read things, William, and I think to myself, wait a minute. Is that have some meat and potatoes to it? I just don't know enough, I guess. I'm being honest with you, like for this podcast and we're trying to share with the public, I wonder how other people, you know, like you talked about average citizens all over the world. I mean, how they perceive that.
But well, here's that's how a good point. Let me just jump in and then you give a thought. But I think they did that in the Biden debate, right? And Trump's numbers went up. Now, whether that's because Biden can articulate or whatnot, but I don't think that argument on their end really holds any weight because of what you just said. People don't really understand it, and it's easier to just say, oh, they're just using it to make sure I'm not president.
And then you have black men who are critical of the vote. They always talk about women, women, women. Well, Trump is making big gains amongst black men. They make the average white person go, you know, I really don't understand that. And you get a brother or a Latino or something. Oh, brother, I know what he's talking about. And it creates – so it's perception versus reality, which brings us to Big John's comment on nonsense on J6. Pelosi has no authority to call out the guard. Classic Trump gibberish. It's not gibberish. It's perception versus reality. It's how people perceive the truth. And it was a great counter to the lies they were talking about J6. If I remember correctly, I do know people who personally told me that was an insurrection. I'm like, buddy, you haven't seen jack shit in terms of what a real insurrection is, much less the friendly riots of 2022. You know, that did more damage. So when people look at reality, then you confuse it with creating a perception. It works politically. So you may be right technically, but it didn't matter. He countered it to the point where people are going to go, oh, see, it wasn't his fault. You combine that with this, we need a peaceful protest. And what he said about J6, how, let's be honest, it was an unarmed man it was an unarmed woman, petite veteran, who was killed by the cop. So this is what you call the W in Trump's column, where truth doesn't matter in these ugly political and I'm going against my true belief because I want the truth. But this got so deep into the BS coming from the left and the media that this doesn't bother me in terms of the technicality. Because at the end of the day, I can also tell you this. In the fog of war, and when this was happening, you get the Speaker of the House that says something, that National Guard, that general is going to go, okay, regardless. And then he'll play the politics afterwards and said, the number three person in power of this country said, don't call the National Guard out, so I did it. So it doesn't matter what the truth is in reality here versus what the perception is and what Trump was able to gain out of it. Of course, that's just my take. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm saying that's how it came out.
I would say that I agree with John's middle sentence. Pelosi had no authority. Trump had the authority to say, let's send these people in. And she refused it. So she rejected it. So, yeah.
No. And that's my whole point is, yes, he's right. She has no authority, but perception versus reality. It's
right.
Sad,
yeah, exactly.
But perception will always trump reality, you know. All right, let's move on to Hamas. I thought Kamala was very surprisingly, she didn't shock me, but I was like, whoa, she's going down that road. She's willing to give up Michigan and she's putting all her eggs in Josh Shapiro and Pennsylvania when she surprisingly supported Israel. You know, to me, that tells me that internal polling is showing she's losing the Jewish vote more than what they thought they possibly would. Because what she said tonight will resonate negatively in Michigan with the big Muslim factions up there. She came back to the ceasefire. Personally, Israel's had enough. There is going to be no ceasefire. They literally want to destroy Hamas now. But Trump is bold. Trump was bold. He goes, would it have happened if I was in charge? Baby, you know, not only that, Ukraine wouldn't have happened, you know. So I thought Trump was very bold. But the thing is there were no wars under Trump. There were no invasions under Trump. So that gave Trump gravitas to pull that comment off where I thought Kamala was trying to save the Jewish vote. Annette, what was your take on the whole Hamas-Israel situation? And before you answer, though, he also tossed in Iran in there, too. Hey, they were broke when I was in power. Y'all gave him $300 million. So, technically speaking, Iran is, indirectly speaking, Trump didn't say this, but Iran is Hamas's benefactor. They used that $300 million to help fund this terrorism. So how did you think that whole portion of the debate went down?
He was strong. He did really well. I thought it was one of his finest moments because she did not seem at all authentic in her support of Israel. I thought she first of all, because everything that they're doing has been showing the opposite. And when she says that she supports Israel's right to defend itself, and then she brought up the two-state solution again. And that showed me, I'm sorry, but that showed me right there, she has no real understanding of what is going on in the Middle East. So for me, she was completely discredited with that comment, a two-state solution. You don't understand. Those people will never let them arrest. There is no safety for them if there's a two-state solution because every time they get their plot of land back and they try to like make it real nice for them and they get to live there again. They just wait it out because they're very patient people and they attack again. They don't want them there. They hate them. They're never going to want them there. And they've said that 1,000 times. I'm going to take them at their word for it now. So she doesn't have any understanding of that situation. So I took her as completely inauthentic on that. I thought he was very strong. He said the truth. The truth is, he's got a record to rest on there. He doesn't have those invasions. He's the kind of person that I think he's just unpredictable enough that people say, you know, I don't think I know I want to do that.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. I can relate to that. In the military, a couple of times they called the chaplain on me because being Latino, being emotional, I always spoke my mind. And some people thought, boy, he's crazy. He's nuts. You know? And now I understand why some of my dad's friends would always tell me that, yeah, we always thought your dad was the guy who was going to lose it. Because I'm like, it's because we're emotional. You know? But that said, you know, gee, your take on it. But let me toss this in there. Trump. When I jokingly said he brought his A game in the monologue, but he was able to sit there and say, hey, who did Putin endorse? Kamala, you know? I mean, he was able to throw that in there, you know? And I don't know if he did this in this portion of the debate, but he even brought it back to Keystone, immigration, you know? It's like, so he was pretty good, if I remember correctly. My notes are a little scattered, but he was pretty good in there. But what was your overall take on, what was your take on him bringing it back and making sure America knew Putin endorsed Kamala? But more importantly, what was your take on that?
There were a few moments, and I wish I had taken better notes, but you could see on her face that he got under her skin and she wanted to respond and she didn't. But she was responding with a face that was like it was like a fear that she had, right? Like this, I can't believe he just said that and I need to respond. Am I losing this debate? Like you could see everything that she's thinking in her mind, right? And I think one of those moments was that moment where Putin endorsed Kamala last week, I believe it was. And then he said she has a strange laugh, and I don't know. It was an insult, but I think, you know, they want a weak person as the head of the United States, right? So I think he also said we're the laughing stock of the world, and she couldn't respond to that. So I think there were a lot of moments that he also had that were unresponded to. Going back to the Israel-Hamas thing, she started off with her stories, right? And Democrats do this. Like, I met this woman at the supermarket. And all she could afford was the generic, right? The generic cereal and not the brand name cereal, right? And she did the same thing with Israel. Well, there was these women, and they were just at the concert. And we all know that. We all know that. So why are you telling this story? The reason why you're telling us the story is because you think either one, we haven't heard it yet, which it was worldwide news, or two, you're trying to like make us tear up and go, oh yeah, that's right, right? And try to draw some emotion out of it. I think that fell flat. Maybe it showed that she might care about them. But then she ended that segment with, this war needs to end, and it needs to end. I don't remember what she said now, but soon. There are no details there. Just needs to end. What does that mean?
Yeah, that was her whole shtick.
So what does that mean? You drop a nuke on Gaza, or you tell Israel hightail it out of there, or we stop sending you weapons? Like,
well,
what does that mean?
Well, she did give a two-state solution. It's her way of ending it. And that is absolutely right. That did fall flat. Real quick here, Big John, as we do know, he publicly admits he has TDS. So take the second portion with a grain of salt. But it's a great comment he made. Harris' biggest mistake was selecting Waltz instead of Shapiro. And that stunned me when she selected Waltz instead of Shapiro, because I thought Shapiro would have secured Pennsylvania and the Jewish vote. But at the time, with all the riots, all the protests, with Hamas's back people, I think that's why they went Waltz. And Waltz, look, I'm sorry, Waltz proves you can be a moron, an idiot, a useless excuse for a human being, and get elected to a high position in government.
Right.
To me, and I'm not kidding. I mean, strongmen, you see dictators, they're not the baddest guys, but they'll kill you, so that's how they get power. Waltz is a bully, that's how you got elected. So I think Big John is absolutely right. I think he's wrong that she walks away with the election. Shapiro scared me because I'm like, that could tilt it into her favor, but there would never have been any walking away with it.
And to that point, I will say Shapiro declined it. I suspect he declined it.
It could be because she's a loser. She's a one and done. When I say loser, I apologize. If she wins, she's not a loser. But if she loses this election, she's done politically because she doesn't have support within the party. She was smart as a mean girl, grabbed the bull by the horns, and kind of through being a VP, kind of made herself the de facto nominee to the point nobody could sit there and challenge her without looking like a racist, bigoted hypocrite, because that's what they accuse everybody else of. So anybody that's a Democrat, including a minority, that would have sat there and said, no, we don't want her. Because had it been a minority, they would have pulled the, well, you don't like her, she's a woman card. There was no, it was a lose-lose for every Democrat. And I think Shapiro may have seen the writing on the wall, goes, this is not the train I want to attach myself to. Whereas Walsh goes, this is the only train that's ever going to come by in my lifetime. So from that perspective, yes, I agree. Now, Afghanistan. Again, going back to Annette, what you said earlier in the episode, a missed opportunity by Trump to hammer it in there because it was like night and day. And he even flubbed up the great story that Donaldson, the congressman from Florida, brought Byron Donald. Is it Byron Donalds or Byron Donaldson? When he told the story to Megyn Kelly of how when Trump impressed him and telling the story of handing the picture over to the Taliban leader and saying, you know, if anything happens to any American, you're dead. You know, here's a picture of your house. I mean, so I thought, going back to Annette early on, he could have hammered that point in. But I thought he defended himself well on Afghanistan. I thought she did get some points by stating that we are in no wars at all, or I don't know how true it is. But that was, you know, I'm like, okay, I can see people buying that. But how did you think, Annette, he handled the Afghanistan issue? But I did think he wasn't brilliant. But he did come back well enough with Abdul, and no Americans were killed in the for 18 months while he was in charge. And before you answer, did you notice this was a typical threesome tactic that the two moderators and Kamala use? David Muir immediately wanted to move on from Afghanistan because he saw there were no points to be scored for Kamala there. So what were your thoughts on the Afghanistan portion?
Well, I thought it was good. Again, I don't, sometimes Trump is interesting to me. Like, you know, sometimes what he'll do is be like, it was the best economy we've ever had. These people are coming over the border. I was the strongest president we've ever been, that there's ever been. There's never any wars under me. But like, he drives those points home. But sometimes for me, he lacks like that, like I want him to be more substantial in some of the things that he says, you know, and give us something a little more descript and, you know, that is more meaningful instead of what feels like, you know, yes, it was the best economy, but then I feel like he should go on past that, or the best economy that it's ever been since, you know, the lowest inflation ever, and this is the worst inflation ever. I mean, sometimes I don't like it when he does that, and I wish that he would not do that. I thought he was fine in Afghanistan. He wins there easily, and that was the point. It was sort of like a missed opportunity again.
Exactly. So,
soldiers, I mean, and the horrific, and by the way, I can't remember, William, so forgive me if I'm spacing out on this point, but is anyone talking about how many people are still there and now what Afghanistan is like now and the people living under the Taliban? And what's
happening?
Did you mention that? I'm sorry if I'm forgetting.
No, I know what you're talking about. That's a phenomenal point that nobody's covering. The media will not cover it because it was Biden's withdrawal, you know, and they're not talking about all the weapons. Again, as I said some podcasts back, one of the most critical weapons that were left behind was the electronic gear that they can scan now. They know every Afghan that helped Americans. They had that. They have that database, and now they're hunting them down right now as we speak. So that's not something the media is going to talk about. But in Trump's defense, it wasn't a place for that talk in the debate, because that's a very that's a conversational type debate, you know, where you have to bring up a lot of technicalities, a lot of describing the weapons, how much money we're sending a weekly. It's not something you can put into a debate. But you're right, that was not brought up, that was not talked about. Gee, your take. Oh. And Trump did miss an opportunity by not bringing up the report that just came out this week, the 13 dead Americans specifically, because of how Kamala was the – and I would have gone with this. I see, I don't believe Kamala had as much say in any decision as her and the media have propped her – propped her up to have made. But they made their bread, and I would have brought up the 13 dead Americans, and Kamala was the last person in the room with that decision. You know, gee, your take on Afghanistan.
And yeah, I thought he was going to bring up the last person in the room thing, and he didn't. But that was the turning point of Biden's presidency, right? He never recovered from, I believe he was over 50% approval rating before that. And then after that, he never recovered over 50%. And he always went down into the 40s and then the 30s with the rough economy over the last couple of years. And now it's getting worse and worse. So I think Trump scored points there in terms of that. You noticed she didn't have any much of a comeback. Her comeback was, well, you had the Taliban over at Camp David. And Camp David, I mean, you know, Jesus died there, right? Jesus, like, his shroud and his grave is in Camp David. Like, it's like, wait, what? I don't think America has any, like, emotional attachment to Camp David, right? I mean, maybe Gettysburg. If you brought
Right.
Gettysburg, then it would be like, what are you doing, dude? But Camp David is, I think we know Camp David as a place where you try to bring people together and talk, right? Mm-hmm. And then Trump actually made the case that he said, I showed him the picture, and it wasn't articulate. I'll admit that. I showed him the picture of his house. And he's like, why are you showing me the house? He's like, don't kill any of our soldiers. And we didn't have any soldiers killed after that. So you have to do a little bit of sleuthing and go, what did he mean by that, right? So, you know, again, it was a moment in the debate. And again, I don't know what kind of pressure they have with 1 minute to answer or 2 minutes on the initial question. But
well, it's easy for us.
He gave enough. He gave enough, right?
Yes. It's easy for us because we're sitting back there. We don't have any pressure. We don't have the political gun to our head called pose and how the American thinks. So, because I've been in that situation, and we all have as politicians, at one point or another, somebody asks a question, you got to think quickly. You know, sometimes you, an hour later at home or you're driving home, you're like, but he got his point across, not eloquently. It was a missed opportunity. And Camp David, I don't think you're right. That's just, in fact, I hollered out to my wife because she's watching in another room and I'm here taking notes. And I was saying, what the hell was that? You know, and missed opportunity on both sides. But, and again, to your point, that's why David Muir moved on from that quickly. All right, let's wrap it up here with Obamacare and climate change. I thought Trump gave an honest answer. Again, he's too coarse, should have been a little bit more detailed, but he's like, look, I have concepts. You know, we have talked and they're going to come out here. But Obamacare is a dead issue from the perspective Democrats won. They got it into the system. Now it's next to impossible to get rid of it. And so nobody really cares about Obamacare as they did 4 to 8 years ago. Now it's kind of part of our world now that we're forced to live with. So again, they wanted to bring up old tropes on that. Then they bring McCain up, and what Democrats fail to realize, McCain is not really popular anywhere. You know, and the average American at this point, who's McCain? Isn't he that big girl related to that big girl? You know, Megan, you know, that's about, I mean, so again, we see the old Trump, and then climate change, you know, she did hit Trump. It's always kind of like that steady batting average hitting Trump. Well, climate change is a hoax, you know, but it falls on deaf ears. Again, when people think climate change, a lot of people now think, yeah, all that green energy just made my gas prices, my electricity bill, the grid, everything's gone up in price. So again, reaching to the well on something, it's kind of like when I'm trying to think of an analogy here. You know, when you get something and 4 years later, if the potency of whatever it is gone, that's how I view Obamacare and climate change politically. The potency of the power that had 4 to 8 years ago is like a 1 on a scale of 1 to 10 now. People just don't care because they care more about the bills they're having to pay, which includes Obamacare. Again, my story is simple. $3,000 for a PPO before Obamacare. $15,000 a year now, if not higher, for my wife and I now. So that's how Obamacare is affected. So I just don't see it as a great political issue. We'll go first to G, and then we'll go to Annette on Obamacare and climate change. How do you think that went for Trump or Kamala?
So I will say David Muir started that question. I think it was him with, you did it, you promised 8 years ago it would be gone. Now it's not here, or it's still here. You didn't succeed. And you're right. It is not an issue today, right? Or not as big of an issue. So back then, if you remember, it was 6 years old as a thing. Now it's 14 years old. So, yeah, it's not as big of an issue. But I think in order for Trump to get out of that without saying, oh, we're just going to accept Obamacare, right? And that would be bad on the right. They'll be like, what, we're just giving in? Because I would personally like to see Obamacare go away.
Oh, yes.
But he gives a good answer. Like, we need to replace it with something better. So that was a good answer. And then his answer to Obamacare being strengthened was, look, you can let it die in the vine. So it was a middle of the road. Again, a centrist answer. We can let it die in the vine or strengthen it because we can get rid of it. So he answered that perfectly. Kamala gave the same answer, right? She said, we strengthened it. So in the end, like, I don't remember her even attacking him on, let's get, like, he wants to get rid of it. Or she might have spent one sentence on it. So that seemed like a non-issue. Climate change, I remember the thing, the statement she said, well, he thinks it's a hoax. But the rest of that segment, like, I don't even remember anything about it. All I remember is gas prices are high, and that's about it, right? So she didn't score any points. I don't think he scored any points. I think that was another wash.
I agree. Annette, your thought? Oh, real quick, Annette, before you answer that, G, and then Annette, I want you to answer this question. I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. But remember that, what did you think? I'm sorry, Annette, first you answer the Obamacare and the climate change, and then we'll go to the final topic.
And no, I thought it was a bit of a wash too. And I just want to say something, William, that from the last time we spoke, or maybe you brought this up and I can't remember if you did or you didn't, but I did some research on it. This is more about climate change, the lithium batteries. Is that fire still happening in Escondido? I looked up lithium batteries and went out, but there's fires all over. But when we talk about climate change, no, those there are. There are so many, I could not believe it. I was like, I looked that up and I was like, wow, that's really scary. But what it made me think of about climate change, when they talk about green energy and everything, you know, going electric and all that stuff, I'm like, I don't think these people really know what they're doing and what they're saying sometimes. So I thought it was a wash. The Obamacare, again, it's sort of such a what a complex topic talking about healthcare. If people only understood how much worse healthcare is now, we need to do a segment on it. But it's so much worse. It's exactly what you said. It's more expensive. You can only change your health services one time a year in the state of California at the end of the year, December and January, they open it up. If you don't get it then, you're out. I'm out right now. So it's been a nightmare for me. So it's a terrible, terrible, terrible system. Maybe Trump didn't know enough about it to really, and again, you can't really get into these issues deeply. So him saying like, we're going to do something better. I mean, maybe it's all you can do. I don't know if people really, if you don't want to be like, we've given up on this, what can we do? We just have to accept it. It needs to be revoked. They need to institute something else. Someone needs to get on that and try to understand the complexity of it. It is not going to be an easy fix, for sure. But to me, that was, for me, of the entire evening of the debate, that's where I started to get a little fatigued.
Yes. No, you're right. Even I was fatigued because I'm like, go ahead and show. They're dragging it on. No, you're right. I would have gone about it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
I would have chosen that moment to unite the country against not only the health insurances, but the rhinos in his own party because of this. I would have sat there and said, we actually had something on the verge, but because somebody hated me more than they cared about the American people, they voted no against it and kept these high prices and kept doing what the health industry wanted to do with Obamacare, make it a benefit to them at the cost of the people. But see, Trump doesn't have that eloquence. And the reason, and thinking that as G was responding, it made me realize the final point I wanted to talk about. Again, going back to Annette, you were so brilliant in saying how there were so many points that he could have just been so much better on, and this was another one. But I thought he did good enough. And all those intel officers, they have just signed that Trump, it's going to be worse than, if he gets back in, it's going to be this. Nobody liked them. They all quit. And then Trump came back with the old apprentice answer. It's because I fired him. And they went and wrote a book. You didn't fire anybody after Afghanistan. You know, you didn't fire anybody. The economy, you haven't fired anybody. And it's like, and in my mind, I just kept thinking Trump going, you know, that's how, you know, Trump, you're fired. You're fired. You're fired, you know. And I thought he came back and answered that very coarsely, but he got his point across because those 50, I mean, it's been proven to be a lie, the 50 intel. In fact, somebody from CNN, the husband, was one of those intel officers that signed it, you know. So the fix was in with that, and I thought Trump could have been much better set in bringing that out. Well, all these are people who have ties to the Democrat Party, have ties to progressives within the mainstream media. But at the end of the day, I thought he came back well enough with the I fired him. Of course they don't like me. Of course they write books on me. You haven't, and him attaching, you haven't fired anybody, and then attaching a debacle after another to the, you haven't fired anybody. I got to the average layman. They're like, yeah, they haven't fired anybody. And we got 13 dead Americans, you know. So we'll close it out with that. But in terms of your remarks on that, G, then we'll go to Annette to close the show out.
No, he should have gone one step further, and I agree with everything he said. Like, he handled that beautifully, but. And I think John will like this, but he should have said when she said, Dick Cheney endorsed me. He should have said, great, because we're trying to get rid of our party of all the neocons, and they're all joining you, right? Like, he should have put the cherry on the top and said, we don't want the warmongering neocons. And right. he hammered beautifully the Ukraine, the Middle Eastern wars, that they would end under him, right? Now, he didn't give any details on how he would end the Israeli war. But, okay, so...
Oh, and NATO, NATO. Add NATO to that. Add NATO to that. He handled NATO well. I got to pay their fair share.
Right, yeah. And that's exactly true. They're ripping us off, right? And because we're the wealthiest country, and there's this idea that we pay the most. So, I think he should have just put the cherry on top and said, look, you can have all the neocons... and we'll have the regular people in our party. That's where he should have ended it. But there might have been a calculation where he didn't want to piss off the establishment, the Nikki Haley wing of the party. So maybe that's why he didn't go there. But other than that, I think he handled it beautifully.
I think you're looking at it from the top level down, which is how most of them would. But I think at the end of the day, as Annette used the term fatigued, I think America's fatigued with all these wars, all this money. And again, I keep going back to it. Because right now, all they care about is paying their bills. And they're seeing all this money go to everybody but to them. So, Annette, how did you think he handled the fact that she tried to use the nobody likes you, everybody wants you out of there, they think you'll be the worst president? In essence, what she was saying is death is coming to America if Trump is elected. And she used these people as proof of that. How do you think he handled it in his response back?
Well... wait, I'm going to answer that, but can I be like Kamala and answer something else first, tell you something else first? Did you see General McMaster being interviewed? He came out with a book, and, you know, General McMaster was under Trump.
Right.
And
then
Trump fired him, right? Which, to his point, he fires people when it's not working, whatever it is. We need to do that. I agree with that 100%. He came out, and I saw him being interviewed. You know what he said? He said those Democrats, when it comes to all these wars and these Afghanistan, he mentioned all these conflicts. He goes, they are feckless. Feckless.
Yes.
Weak. Not strong. I was like, and this is not even a guy who, like, is a Trump lover, quite honestly. He is not. But I was like, I only wish that he would have known that McMaster said that about the Democrats and could have maybe at some point interjected that, because I think it was really powerful for me to hear him say that as someone who I know was in Trump's administration and did not stay on, and maybe they had a disagreement, whatever it was. Another thing I wish Trump would have done, I just want to make sure we say it before we finish and close out. Did you see when they first came out, and the candidates first came out, Kamala walked to Trump. He didn't walk all the way out. I know, but okay, William, I did take that as a little bit rude. I'm sorry. I was like, oh, come on. Just me.
Okay, no. You're right. That was a bonus point for Kamala, because I didn't think she would do it. She looked the bigger person, but it happened so quick. I don't think anybody cared. I get your point. It's one of those little innuendos that a handful of people will have noticed. I did notice it, that she came out properly, but we are so tribalistic. I don't think people cared. enough at the fact. I think they looked at Trump and not saying, hey, no big deal. That woman has said to him. See, and that was the other thing. She kept saying, he's going to lie. But she's the one who kept lying. She's the one who's lied the whole campaign trail. So all of this, if she comes across as that mean girl. In fact, that's what I was going to say about G when he mentioned about her facial expression and all that. Some of the looks she gave, I've been in the Navy at some friends' houses at times, and you see the spouse, you give that look, and you're like cockroaches when the lights turn on. You just want to scatter and get out of there. When you see that look on a woman, you're like, I'm out of here. And that's the look she kind of gave. The problem was she couldn't get into her attack mode because of the rules of the debate. That's why, and if you notice, she actually tried to interject a couple times. And I thought Trump was very straight-laced. Excuse me, I am talking right now. He didn't say it in a personal way, but said it tersely enough to get his point. Bitch, what are you doing? And I hate to use that word, but that's how it came across in a way that worked for him.
One time, William, didn't he say, have you heard that before?
Yes, I did it. I was taking notes. What was he referring to when he said that?
I thought he was referring to, what you just said, William.
He said, I'm speaking now.
Have you heard that?
Oh, yes. He was referring to the VP debate with Pants.
Yeah.
You know, she's done it so much. You know, it could be anything. But I do remember seeing just the other day, you know, she was chastising Pence. And she came across with a sympathetic, I'm a lady here. Why are you all over me? You know, and Pence handled it as best he could, but she won that little point right there. So that's what I thought when I heard it. I'm looking up, I'm like, that's what came to my mind. But what did you think she was referring to, or he was referring to, Annette? Do you remember?
No, I thought he was just like when he said that. You mean William? I thought he was giving her a jab.
Oh, he was, but it's like, what was the jab in reference to? My thought it was Pence. Did you have any idea?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, that's what I thought it was. Yes.
No, so yes. Okay, gotcha. Exactly. Because she was trying to open the mics back up, which I was confused because it seemed like the mics were both open up because she wanted to say, "I'm speaking now. I'm speaking."
Right.
Yes. And, yes. So we're right.
She didn't get that chance, and then she did try to talk over him, and he used that against her.
Yes.
So he was obviously prepared for that. And then he said, does that sound familiar? I didn't catch that.
It was so good.
So Trump did not win this debate, but the odds were so stacked against him coming out with a draw. And he did win. I think Trump, he lost nobody. I thought it was incumbent on Kamala to gain traction because her campaign has been a fraud. So this was her one point to be in front of the guy and to try to take jabs that were legit, and she completely failed, even with the moderators trying to help her. So that's how I look at the overall debate. I think, G, you're right. I didn't want to believe you from the last debate that when you said, yeah, it's not going to change anything. But in this case, that's kind of good for Trump. But I will also say this, at the last podcast we did, or a couple of podcasts, I said, you know, Trump's just not a great debater. Trump, to me, was impressive because he kept his composure and with the odds stacked against him, managed to come out in many ways the winner. Even though it's not going to change anything, I think he won by not losing this debate. So before we close it out, though, because we kept going back and forth on different topics, any final points? Annette, we'll start with you. Any final points about tonight's debate you want the audience or would like us to know?
Yeah, I think he was strong. I think he was strong, even though they spoon-fed Kamala. I think at times she seemed, I think the worst thing that I could say about her, even if at times there were points that she made that were good, is that she always seems to me to be extremely inauthentic, even if she's not cackling or laughing or sneering. She always comes off to me as being totally inauthentic. And I think that Trump held his own on some really important points because he has the record of their you know, presidency over the last 4 years, and he has his record and things he can actually stand on that are substantial. And that is where I feel like at the end of it all, that's what's going to carry him through.
Correct. I agree. G, final words?
Yeah, so I was looking at this article on Fox Business. The Poly Market before the debate gave Harris a 75% chance of winning the debate compared to Trump's odds of 25% chance.
Wow.
But they give Trump the edge to win the actual election in the end, right? Because I think it comes down to issues in the end. So who came out looking authentic? And I think it was going to be maybe two or three things. Who comes out looking authentic? I think Trump came out looking authentic, although she way far exceeded expectations, right? He came out looking authentic. She looked rehearsed, I think. Number two is who looks stronger. I think Kamala looked strong. She looked like that prosecutorial type thing, but she also looked like when I know I'm going in the doghouse, William, you and I know, you know that look, and she gave that look quite a few times, and that you never get that look, I'm sure. But right now, when I'm going into the doghouse, I'm like, that's the look, and it's like, okay, she gave that look to Trump quite a few times during the night. But I think in the end, it's going to come down to issues. So
yeah.
who do people believe will be strong in the economy? I mean, I think that's hands down Trump.
And she never answered any policy question. I'm gonna answer all those questions, blah. And then they never revisited her. And I think that's why, in certain ways, Trump won.
Wait, one thing before you finish, William, because I know you should end the show, but I forgot to say that I thought he was really strong at the end when he talked about war and a nuclear war.
Yes, he got stronger. He got, as the debate went on, Trump, in fact, I put that in my notes, he was getting stronger, which is, goes to your point, why I think David Muir was more, and it seemed like David Muir did the most of the fighting, you know, combating, but that's why I think he became reckless in terms of trying to challenge Trump or trying to throw things out there on Trump. Guys, great debate talk. I was a little worried that I was going to be on my own, and I'm looking at all these points. This is always fun to talk debate issues on here. I hope they do another one. I hope they do one on Fox, actually, where they actually talk policy, because if they do one on CBS, this is going to be just another repeat. Dana Lesh had a good – to go to G's point, we'll close it out. But Dana Lesh had a good point here. The debate is pointless. It's the worst debate I've ever watched in my career where I've had to watch or attend debates. The moderation is that bad. I think her point that she's trying to say is there was no policy. And at the end of the day, in today's economy, since COVID, people care about the economy. Not necessarily the economy using that term, but again, their bills, the kitchen politics. And with that, my friends, thank you for attending. You can follow Annette Rosser at Annette_Ross5, and you can follow G. Mangani at RSFG. At X, you can see both of their profile handles. Follow them. We all need the support. You can find this podcast and others like it at grumblingsmedia.com. You can find us at our social media platforms, including Rumble, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora, under the profile handle Grumblings Media. Thank you for attending this special podcast presentation, and we'll see y'all again in a few days. Until then, this is William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up, and I, G, and Annette bid you adieu.